The Space Show, bringing the universe home to the Bayside, Wednesday evenings at 7 p.m.
There are two Australians that have taken up residence aboard the International Space Station. No, they're not astronauts. They are small satellites. On the first day of spring, yes, today is the first day of spring, we are amused to note that they will be spring ejected from the Kibo module of the space station. One satellite was built in Sydney and the other in Perth. Both were launched on Sunday afternoon as cargo aboard the SpaceX Dragon cargo resupply mission. As we shall hear, it will probably be a month before they will have to walk the plank and take their chances for life in independent orbit. So first we pop up to Sydney, where Professor Ivor Cairns spoke about his satellite on Saturday afternoon.
Hello and welcome. I'm Professor Ivor Cairns, Director of the Australian Research Council's Centre for CubeSats, UAVs and their applications, otherwise known as CUAVA, and Professor at the University of Sydney. It's my great pleasure to welcome you on behalf of the entire CUAVA team to this event, a deliberately informal launch party for CUAVA's first satellite, CUAVA 1. This event celebrates the launch of CUAVA 1 into orbit to the International Space Station. So we're going to proceed by having a discussion of the big picture of CUAVA by me, followed by a description of the satellite itself by Dr. Shirley-Ann Bai, who's the training center engineer, followed by brief presentations by the instrument teams. So what is a CubeSat? CubeSat is a satellite built up of cubes, which are 10 centimeters on a side, each one forming one unit. CUAVA 1, which you see here, is a three-unit CubeSat. Weighs about 2.8 kilograms. Why is it important? Well, it's our first CubeSat, the first one for CUAVA, and it addresses four foci via four payloads and two separate technology demonstrations. So a very sophisticated spacecraft. First one is focused on Earth observations and the Tolleboy astrometric instrument, otherwise known as ISTI. It's a GPS instrument called KIA, from the University of New South Wales. There's a space weather instrument, which is a radiation counter, looking at energetic particles hitting the spacecraft. And then a reconfigurable electronics instrument called RUSH. And then the technology demonstrations, which are a data over power network and a solar cells from our partner, Airwave Communications. We're going to launch to the ISS today on a Falcon 9, mission SPX-23 from the Cape. The contracts with Space BD, which then is to JAXA, the Japanese Space Agency, and then SpaceX, and you know the nominal launch time. The deployment from the ISS actually into space for CUAVA will nominally be in the first week of October. We have special thanks to many groups, including those here, and the CUAVA team, of course, especially Shirley-Ann Bai, Dunko Un, Rain McMillan, and Helen Brand. So what is CUAVA? CUAVA, as we mentioned, is a Australian Research Council training center for CubeSats, uncrewed aerial vehicles or UAVs and applications. And our focus is developing a world-class Australian space industry in CubeSats, UAVs and their applications. So we're nominally a five-year training center, starting in very late 2017, going to the end of 2022. But due to COVID, we expect an extension to the end of 2023. About $6 million in the centre, but then we're looking for new grants, including Waratah Seed from the New South Wales government. We're expecting to have 2 to 3 CubeSats over our lifetime. So our goals are to train the next generation of workers in cutting-edge advanced manufacturing, entrepreneurship and commercial space and UAV, but then developing new instruments, technology and products to solve particular problems and helping to develop a world-class Australian space industry. We have three themes, systems, instruments and products. These ones, both CubeSats and UAVs. These ones primarily CubeSats. 12 projects, and CUAVA 1 involves CubeSats, of course, itself. Images, and hyperspectral images to be precise. Also remote sensing applications, There's GPS as well, and space weather. So these are the aims and interests of Koala. And we are ready to go. So here we are. We're looking forward to being in space. Thank you.
And Chris is one of the team members, and he has a more detailed description of Koala 1.
Hi, everyone. My name is Chris Betters, and I'm the kind of lead developer on the INSTI instrument, which is actually a combination of two instruments. We've got an imager and a spectrograph, and something called the Tiny Tall instrument. Now, both of these are... one of them is a ground viewing instrument, so it's kind of a ground imager, originally meant to be a hyperspectral imager, but it's kind of a test bed for future missions. And the other one is this tiny tall telescope, which will point out into space to image a binary star systems is the primary goal of it. Then also the actual payload helps host the Kia GPS antenna, and it's all run by a little Raspberry Pi compute module-based board, which actually runs the two image sensors that both instruments use, which are both Raspberry Pi cameras. So there's the imager instrument, which is kind of a little telescope with a beam splitter that helps split the light between the Raspberry Pi camera and our spectrograph. Which is actually just an off-the-shelf little instrument from Ocean Optics in this case. The goal is to have around 20 meters spatial resolution with this imager. It's an RGB sensor. And like I said, it's using a Raspberry Pi based camera. And then the Tiny Tall instrument, it's got some similarities in that it's a small little telescope. And it's using this funky diffractive pupil, which actually takes the image and makes it terrible. But because we're looking at point sources, this actually adds a bunch of information for us to measure the separation of binary stars more precisely. So the goal of Tiny Tall, it's kind of a precursor mission to a much larger mission, either Talaboy or Talamin, which will be, you know, tens of centimeters telescopes. And the end goal is to be able to do highly precise astrometry of star systems like the Alpha Centauri system to directly measure the presence of a planet.
When they first started turfing satellites overboard from the International Space Station, an astronaut would go outside and literally hold it in his hand and toss it. Well, things are a little more sophisticated these days. Ivor Cairns explains the ejection process. It's not quite walking the plank.
Maybe I'll just expand a little bit on Shirley Ann's answer about the satellite. So as he said, it all once the satellite is deployed, comes free of the tube that it's kept in, and it's released by a door opening at one end and then a spring at the other, basically going ping, just like in Monty Python, and pushing the satellite out. And it'll go out at about a couple of meters per second, which, you know, is relatively fast here on Earth, but compared with the space station, which moves at about 7 kilometers a second, it's very slow. So it will slowly separate from the space station. And after 30 minutes, as Shirley Ann, it will start to come alive. And it will fly freely. So there's no wire or string or anything attaching us to the space station. We instead will drift apart from it and our orbits will diverge. And over time, the satellite will be hitting air molecules, and some of the satellite's kinetic energy will go to heat up the air molecules and to speed them up. And the satellite will lose energy and slowly spiral into the Earth. Eventually, collisions will become with air molecules will become frequent enough that we'll start to heat up significantly, and eventually we'll burn up. And that should be of order a year, 18 months until we do that. And that partly depends on whether our satellite will spin or tumble, which is not how we want it to fly. We want it to fly in a nice stable orientation. I'm not sure that I can show this, but a nice stable orientation as it moves around the Earth. And that's so that we can point the camera, for instance, at the Earth and at other sources, the ones that Chris is interested in, and we can receive the GPS signals nicely for June, for instance.
That was Ivor Cairns. various people were working on the satellite, and they had responsibility for different areas of the instrumentation. So let's listen to a few of these people now.
Is this the first time Australia is doing reflectometry from space?
To my understanding, GNSS reflectometry, we would be the first attempt, although the actual first attempt was UNSW ECO, but we had actual technical difficulties with that one. So this is our second go with Quabba 2, and we are a bit more more conservative this time, giving Quabba 1 a go at just our GPS operations, and then moving on to a Quabba 2, which has actual support for the reflectometry. So we're more conservative this time as opposed to our ambitious goal back in UNSW ECO.
Quabba 1 is meant to be a tech demonstrator for the navigation board in a larger GNSS reflectometry payload meant for Quabba 2. One unique capability that we will demonstrate here is the fast in-orbit GPS acquisition by providing time and location assistance from the ground, much like how cell phone use cell phone tower information to give you instant GPS location. Otherwise, conventional GPS operations will require you to wait minutes or tens of minutes to obtain a valid GPS location.
Hi, everyone. I would like to provide a brief overview of the RUSH payload on Quabba 1 CubeSat. RUSH payload is designed to showcase fault-tolerant reconfigurable systems for space. The primary objective of the RUSH payload is to demonstrate and validate new approaches to rapidly recover from radiation-induced single-event upsets in commercial SRAM-based FPGA devices. So we are targeting COTS devices. At the heart of the RUSH payload is the Xilinx Arctic 7 SRAM FPGA, chosen for its high logic density to power consumption ratio. It is on Xilinx Arctic 7 FPGA where the experiments take place. And we also have a Microsemi Smart Fusion system on chip, a flash FPGA acting as the microcontroller unit, which oversees the overall operation of the RUSH payload and acts as an interface between the payload and the CubeSat onboard computer. So the RUSH payload was designed and built to compare the performance of module and scrubbing-based approaches to SEU recovery. Scrubbing is commonly used for SEU detection and recovery. With this approach, however, the configuration memory of the FPGA is continually scrubbed, even if there are no errors. With the module-based approach that we have developed, the recovery process is only triggered when there is an error, and we are able to pinpoint the error location and fix that specific part. During the experiments, SEU events will be logged by the MCU, and the time, location, and the time to recover will be transmitted to Earth as Quabba 1 makes its passes over the ground station. We will have both techniques running at the same locations to ensure fair comparison. So we would like to see how module and scrubbing-based approaches compare to one another. It is important to note that all of this would not have been possible without the contributions from a team of academics, researchers, PhD, masters, and thesis students. We are very excited about the Quabba 1 launch and can't wait to see the RUSH payload turned on in orbit. Thank you very much.
My name is Yi Jun. I'm a PhD student at the Space Systems Engineering Laboratory at the School of Aerospace, Mechanical, and Mechatronic Engineering. My PhD topic is data over power bus for satellites. This figure is our radiation counter and data over power bus payload for Quabba 1. It contains a radiation counter array and an experimental version of the data over power bus. The solid-state radiation counter used in this payload is BG51SM, which can detect both beta and gamma radiation. Several detectors together form a detector array to increase the sensitivity and accuracy of the detection. The voltage supplied to the detectors is 3.3 volts. The current draw is approximately 25 microamps. The sensitivity to radiation for each unit is 5 pulses per minute for a 1 microsievert per hour radiation dose. The data over power bus contains 2 nodes. Each node is controlled by a separate ESP32 microcontroller. We collect data from the radiation detector, and the data is encoded at the ESP32 microcontroller and injected into the power line using an injection circuit. Both power and data are delivered to the second node from a single coaxial cable. In the current design, the data over power bus can achieve a speed of 47 megabytes per second. When the Quava 1 is in orbit, we will test the radiation counter and data over power bus together. The onboard computer sends a reading request to data over power bus node 1, and the request is then passed on to node 2 through the DOP line. Node 2 gathers reading from detector array and responds to node 1.
Now, isn't it amazing how much they can cram into something the size of a loaf of bread? Well, in a few moments, we're going to go off to Perth to hear about their satellite.
On FM, online, and on TuneIn, 24/7, this is 88.3 Southern FM.